Alright, hello, welcome to Dailyish for Friday, May 29th. It's balmy 7, maybe 8 degrees now. Hopefully it'll warm up today. This is not a weather podcast. This is a special edition. It's the 100th episode of Dailyish, actually. And yeah, you can hear there's a special guest as well. I just wanted to say, though, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for whoever is sticking around to listen to this. Because as much as I say it's not about stats and downloads, it's definitely about stats and downloads. So there's around 180 to 100 of you that stick around and listen to each episode. Aside from that one time iTunes featured it, and there was like 500 and some downloads. But obviously 400 of them didn't want to stick around and come back. So nuts to them.
They're waiting for the weather report.
I know. Yeah, exactly. So that voice you hear with the birds in the background is from sunny... Let's get the weather from Austin, Texas, Christopher Schmidt.
It's a nice 75 degrees in Austin, Texas.
How's the traffic down there?
Traffic's doing great. Let me just get in the helicopter here. It's cleared up now with traffic, with rush hour being over now. But yeah, it's doing great.
Good Foley. That's like 24 degrees Celsius. So that's nice day out there in Austin. Yep. You didn't get flooded. I heard about some crazy floods.
No, we are stocking an ARC of two of every artisanal microcraft beer. Right. just because it is getting a little crazy out there, but it's been the wettest spring ever. I moved here like 5-6 years ago. This is the wettest spring ever, and so we've had some flooding and some it's been still sad. I mean, there's just homes lost and families we were in a major drought for the last 2 years, and we're like 20 feet from filling our major lake here of water after being like 2 years in the drought.
So wow.
it's and that almost happened overnight. So
yeah. So intense flash flooding almost or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, this isn't weather and this isn't a flood podcast, but you're here to chat about
don't limit yourself, man.
I know. I've been thinking I'm too wide open. I need to focus. Need to niche down, as the marketers say. No, we're gonna talk about you too. That's a passion interest of mine and yours as well. Mm. That's actually how we met, right? Okay. I think we discussed this last time you were on talking to you, but both helped out with u2log.com, which I'm still sad has gone away. But
yeah, but there's plenty of people who have more time and volunteer time than we do. So yeah. We're like I am amazed by how much time they have. But we're both web professionals too. So I mean, like the person who has like, I think, who sites I check out, like, are like at u2.com. And I mean, his main job is like search engine optimization and search engine placement and stuff like that. So, of course his sites would be awesome. So, of course you'd be able to find his stuff on the web, but he's been around the web as long as we have. So it's pretty cool. So yeah, definitely at
u2.com.
Yeah. But yeah, I still miss our site because Von B, Carolyn, she always had like a very interesting point of view, which is, I guess not hating the word interesting, but she had a different point of view than most fans. And I appreciated that, her, whenever she started blogging about U2 and stuff like that too. So I missed that a lot. So
yeah, I missed actually, and like, never mind whatever connection she had, but also the European angle. I found anyways, a lot of the at U2 site is an American site, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
And, but I don't actually, since U2log disappeared, I haven't really kept up with like YouTube rumors that much. I mean, I'll see tweets and stuff, but I don't read blogs the way I did, or YouTube blogs anyways, the way I used to, that's for sure.
Yeah, I check every once in a while because, like, hey, isn't there supposed to be an album dropping? And then I usually check it like every month or so or something like that. So it's I don't check them as much as that because the album's gonna come when it's gonna come, so it's not much worrying about it. It's gonna probably get here sooner.
Yeah. What's how is the recent album? I think I had you on when it first came out, but how is it sitting? We'll get to the tour stuff, but the actual, just the album itself, how is it sitting with you now? I know that you've had a few spins of the LP. Oh, did we lose you to the birds? I think we lost Chris to the birds.
Oh, can you hear me?
There you go. I can hear you.
Hey. Sorry about that. Yeah.
I hear the birds, but I don't think they're that loud. But I guess that could be.
No, I lost. There was some Skype-y loss there for a second.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I was asking you how do you think how does the new album sit with you now?
Oh, I think it's I think when we talked about the episode, we talked about the infamous like Apple drop, you know, like they touched fingers.
Yeah.
And we all had an album in our iTunes, and I thought that mix was really flat, and when they re-released it, the full tracks, they did that, you know, Songs for Innocence Plus updates, they added a new mix to the audio, and I feel like that mix is actually stronger and better for the tracks. They didn't seem as flat, and I feel that it's a really good album. You know, I feel like it's a strong album. I feel like it's I like the songs. I just feel the content is a little too navel gazing for a punk band. You know, so it's kind of. I like the concept doesn't really sit well with me. Like, yeah, we're punk and we want to show you our punk roots. And that's why we're like the biggest rock band 40 years later to talk to you about our punk roots. You know, just and these like melodic songs. And so just like,
in U2 style, they can't do an album that's like where they aren't talking a ton about themselves. Bono's mom. Okay. Right. Their Irish past, you know, or whatever, which actually they haven't, like, they've had the sort of like the early 80s style of like, this is our heartbreaks and our country's heartbreaks. And then they kind of went away from that style of sort of hard on your sleeve kind of songwriting or whatever. And then now this is a bit of a return to that, but I know it's tough not to have it's hard to have a conversation about U2 where people aren't all cynical and jaded. I find, anyways, with like real.
And I come to the conversation cynical and jaded to begin with, so it's gotta be like, it's gonna. But like, also on the flip side, like, could it be the most punk thing to do is to come back 30, 40 years later to make a punk, you know, album about your punk roots, and then just sing about your mom? I don't know, but I don't expect you two to come out with a Green Day album, you know, and say and try to pass it off.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
As a punk album. So, But I enjoy the tracks where they are. I think it's the most Joshua Tree-ish we'll ever see U2 ever again in a new recording. You know, right. I felt like, I think
that's a good call.
That's my kind of impression right now. And, some tracks, I think the last three quarters of the album I like more than the first quarter. And so there's like some Cedarwood, I think I just, you know, the album track, the studio track just does not sit well with me. But, you know, we're transitioning to talking about the tour, but I love Cedarwood Road as a live track. I think that's I think it's playing very well. And the way they have it set up for the tour itself, the visual stuff, we can talk about that later if you want, I don't know. But I think that's a really great song. I'm really enjoying that one.
Yeah, that's what, and I'm sure, like, if whoever, like, you mentioned Green Day or whatever, like, I'm sure this is true of most fans of bands where you love the album version, but then you actually hear them live. Maybe this isn't true of all bands. I guess a lot of bands probably don't perform live that well, or as well as U2 tends to, whether you love or hate U2. But I find the songs take on a new life live, and whether it's just a different solo from Edge or the way that they, you know, intersperse some other stuff in it or the visuals or whatever it is. But and then going back and listening to the album version it improves the song for me, even just with that sort of, I don't know, memory or whatever of the live one. But
How to Dismantle Atomic Bomb. I was like, I found those tracks, some of those tracks to just be just totally flat, and they don't mean anything. Like they don't really resonate. But the Love and Peace or Else song track off the album, I feel like the live version is just like the actual true version.
Yeah, totally. Like the way the visual and the way that they sort of broke it down just to like a single drum and stuff. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually, the last few albums, How to Dismantle Atomic Bomb and No Line on the Horizon, both were, and I think it's interesting, like No Line on the Horizon definitely, even from U2's perspective, feels a bit like a oddball album in terms of how they sort of look at it now in hindsight. I'm sure, like, when they go out on tour, they have to promote it, and it's the thing, and they have to just do it. But
Well, like, even the last tour, like, for the No Horizon tour, right, is that when they were touring and promoting the tour, it was like they just gave up on the album. Like, and they were just like, hey, let's look at this 360-degree monstrosity we built, you know, for our stadium gigs.
Yeah.
You know, and then towards the end, you know, I hope people caught the end, because, like, it was like the Uptown Baby revival, because they came out with the 25th anniversary release of Uptown Baby, and they were just playing most of Uptown Baby along with, you know, some new something. I was just like, holy cow, this is like the closest you're going to get to Zoo TV tour revival that you'll get. So
yeah.
But yeah, there's no mention of like No Line on the Horizon. Yeah, I think they just gave up on that one. So
well, even that, like the U2 2 album, the live collection they put out from the U2 360 tour.
Yeah.
I'm quickly scanning it, and it's like, I think Magnificent and Moment of Surrender are the two tracks from that album that made the cut. And admittedly, like when you have, what are they up to, 13 albums?
Yeah.
It's going to be tough, but you'd think the latest tour would just kind of feature heavily on your live collection tour of that.
Right.
Which right now it seems like, anyways, we'll see again once the tour's over, but like this album definitely feels like it's going to have more, whatever, legs, I don't know, in terms of staying power in the tour set list anyways, I guess. Yeah. But early days, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, the tour. Neither of us have been to a concert, but thanks to the wonders of the internet and somehow... It seems like this should be illegal, but like YouTube channels with basically full concerts streaming recorded at the concerts, presumably on some sort of iPhone-y type device.
Right.
And put it up on YouTube and it stays. Like nobody's taking them down.
Yeah, because, well, back in the 80s, Edge or U2, they made a statement saying like, we're okay with people recording live as long as they don't pass it off as... like official release or as good as a quality as their releases. And this is like in the era of like something I like to call cassette tapes. And so we didn't have like, you know, these, what would you call them? Smartphones. So which can do many things. Like I like to call these smartphones internet revolutionary devices with cameras. And you remember the term handycam? To refer to like a video camera, like because the Zoo TV tour was like filled with references to Handycam, right?
Yeah.
But now it's like there's a video camera in each cell phone. So that just cracked me up. I was watching some old Zoo TV tours. Like, here's a Handycam. Like, what the? And let's not date ourselves too quickly, Bono.
Yeah,
but
they actually do have a little segment where they bring someone up on stage with an iPhone or something, and they stream it out on Meerkat, apparently.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool.
And which I'm sure Twitter's been like lobbying somehow to get them on Periscope. But yeah, it's.
Can we do a podcast about Periscope? Let's just take a pause. Chris's beef about Periscope. So every time I try to like, someone's like, "Hey, I'm periscoping," right? I click on the link, and it's been like a half hour since they've done the periscoping, and there's no way to view the recording.
You have the option. You have the option when after you're done to like save the recording or whatever on Periscope's server or your Twitter servers, and so some people probably don't have that turned on.
Yeah, so I can tell you from my experience, 100% of people do not, and so it's like getting a 404 pair like error. Like, hey, you want like a clickbait? Like, hey, you want to see this? Like, yeah, I'll stick around for some video, you know, need some ads or whatever. Like, and it's like, yeah, your user's not on right now. I was like, I know, that'd be great if they saved the recording for me. They didn't. You just wasted your time. It's like,
I've done it a couple times where I've done it on a podcast like this.
Yeah.
And then, but obviously they only hear one half of the conversation, so it's pretty. Here, I'll turn it on right now and see what happens.
Okay.
Tell eject. Tell me about, what do you think of the set list so far for this tour?
It's great, man. It's pretty awesome. It's probably the best thing I've ever heard in my life, man. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah?
Facetious? Yeah, because you can't hear me at all on your Periscope.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about them.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so setlist. Yeah, so far it's been... But I did want to finish up the thing is that for this tour, the fans have already found out, and they posted this, is that you're okay to bring your cell phone in, of course, because what they're going to do, tell you not to. Like, I mean, I went to a concert where they actually told you not to bring out your phone. I think it was a South by Southwest concert or whatever. But I was at Samsung. I went to the Prince concert at sponsored by Samsung at South by Southwest, and they're like, "You can't bring out your cell phone." I was like, "Do you know this is sponsored by Samsung?" I just want to make sure you know that up front, because there's a big screen that says Samsung behind the stage, you know. So
right,
but for this tour, you actually bring your cell phone in, but they don't ask. They ask you if you don't bring any video camera that has like an actual like professional camera lens or actual like, you know, add on or whatever like that to increase the thing. So it's more of a use your personal phone for your personal like collection and memory collection, and that's okay. And I think they realize that it'll go up to YouTube videos with that and some of that too.
But it is funny because they like the videos are, you know, now obviously like the iPhones are recording in 1080p or 720p HD, and the sound is decent. Like there's something in the iPhone. Like it used to be, you'd record with your cell phone and video, and you just get blasted by the bass. And it probably also is this tour sound. Speaking of sound, for some reason, it's like this revolutionary idea this tour to hang speakers throughout the stadium or the concert venue instead of just blasting it from the stage, which seems like shouldn't be the revolutionary in 2015, right? Like
But
maybe it's just the scale they can do it at now or something, or the technology and speakers has caught up such that they can do that. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me why it's so like amazing.
Because I think you get like a whole bunch of feedback if you did it that way usually. So they've actually did some new technology where they can actually make it work. Where like they deliver the sound at the right time.
Oh yeah.
For this, for different speakers. So the Edge has been working on this with the company forever. And so I think they finally got it to working. And then the sound system guy, I'm not sure if it's the tour manager or not that recently passed away, but he's been working on that for forever. And Joe. And he's been working on that. And so, but they also have speakers, you know, around the stage for people who are up close, so they could get to hear because they're packed in, general standing type of thing. So, they've worked hard on speakers, you know, and trying to get the sound just right, especially for arenas. So it's gonna be an interesting show. And so, I recorded video from the 360 tour of I think it was like Bowie Surrender, and you just can't hear anything on that iPhone. It's just like recording. It's just like It's like, hey, thanks, Chris. Here's a thumbs down.
Yeah.
thanks, man. So there's new sound and new audio. So the video is actually turned out pretty well. But of course, you know, if it depends on how close you are to the stage and what that, you know, and if you can see anything or whatnot. So you just usually just see like blobs of people walking around or whatever. So
yeah, I'm just gonna play a little clip from the. So my ears, I don't know, it might get compressed and stuff with the podcast, but it's actually pretty good for being a fan created video.
Yeah.
And like you could see if U2 was doing, it's interesting you brought up the Zoo TV tour, because like if U2 was doing Zoo TV now,
right,
and had this sort of ambition of an understanding of tech socially, like they tried to back with Zoo TV, they kind of don't really get it these days, it seems. But they could definitely harness some like crazy app where everybody records the concert on their phones, uploads it to this magical Google thing that like stitches together the whole concert from like, you know, whatever, 5,000 different cameras that are spread around the stadium. But anyways, that's another discussion. What I love about what looks like from the videos and stuff is the stage layout where it has this super long, whatever, catwalk, I guess, from like the main stage out to like a B stage, which is like a U2 staple thing now of having a B stage. But the B stage is like the other side of the arena almost.
Right.
And so, and you've got, so basically everybody in the stadium has like potentially front row seats almost.
Right.
To the concert, which is kind of, it's just crazy awesome.
Right, so like in America, where we have what's called football,
right?
American football, but there's a stadium called where the Dallas Cowboys play, and the Dallas Cowboys stadium, it has something that's really unique. Is that it's like the world's largest, like indoor TV screen, and it's like this huge monster LED screen that is attached to the ceiling of this indoor stadium, and it spans almost like this. It's this huge TV that goes, from one end zone to another, to the other end zone, or as other people say, goals, I guess. I don't know. But it's just this huge like thing that kind of splits the stadium in half, right, down the middle, if you will. And so, and the funny thing is, speaking about tours, is that when the 360 tour came in and they went to Dallas, they actually had to pay the stadium folks, like I think on par, like $1 to $2 million, to actually raise that their screen about 2 feet up, so that the so that the claw, the stadium set could actually fit underneath it. So it was because so tall. But and I think, you know, looking at that that means that they've actually saw the Dallas, you know, stadium, and they saw like how like this thing just kind of split the screen, split the stadium, and so they kind of like, I felt like they kind of lowered, the screen down to the stage, and kind of split the arenas now, not in a stadium, but arena.
Yeah.
And so they can have this LED display. And so, and LED display has been, you know, a part of U2T tours since the Pop Mart, right? So they had like TVs during Zoo TV tour, but they didn't have LEDs, really came in. You actually have like a blue LED for the Pop Mart tour. So you could actually have like RGB, like, you know, television screens now with the LEDs, Pop Mart. And so they've been having LED screens since then, and so they know what they're doing, especially, you know, with the LED screens. And so the screen that just splits the middle, and have a catwalk that goes about above it. And so they use almost every trick in the book visually to make it work, like to do some cool things. So like the song we just played, was at Cedarwood Road, and so they actually stretch the LED display, so that you actually have like, there's like lights that can go in, you can actually see behind pixels and, you know, and the lights display. And so they have this big TV, and Bono is walking, kind of like superimposed on this TV screen. And the image that you see is, it's kind of like this old, like Sesame Street, TV kids, like illustration of his neighborhood and what it looks. And so then you see how Bono walking, the real Bono walking through this like TV screen, as, cause he's actually like, no, he's actually there physically walking behind the LED screen. And so he's, you know, singing the song, shutting down the, you know, the whole, like, you know, arena, doing this with his LED screen. So it's you know, just who else but like you two can do that, you know, just, it's crazy.
Yeah. And so there's the catwalk going down the middle of the stadium, like you're saying, or arena. And then this like raised catwalk, like you're saying, behind, right. I don't know if it's two screens. It must be a screen on either side, right? Like for both sides.
So it's
screens, and in between the two screens is that catwalk. And it creates this awesome visual of like the guitar player Edge, you know, walking on the main catwalk, and then Bono's actually above him walking the other way on that catwalk. And so you get this like, rather than, and it's fairly synchronized for that song, obviously, like as far as the video clips to what they're doing. And so they have to play in time with that. It's not like they can abandon the script, so to speak, for that song, but it does allow for spontaneity in terms of the overall set list. They're not tied to like, they sort of have, it seems like anyways, different segments where they're like, okay, now we're doing this segment.
Right.
And we have to, from start to finish, we're going to do that, but we could change this segment to be over here or add this song in afterwards or whatever. And then, but that's the way they've incorporated that screen, I think just as soon as I saw it in practice, cause they, in beforehand, you saw the stage layout without the screens, and it kind of was like, oh, well, yeah, of course they're doing the B stage and the long catwalk. Yeah. But with that screen there, which projects not just obviously like drawings and stuff, but also concert footage.
Right.
So like sometimes like some of the footage you see from people is like you're standing, you're like whatever that would be, 40, 60, 80 feet away from the main stage, but you're looking up right in front of you at this massive picture. TV of Bono or whoever, whatever this, the video footage is of. And so you're kind of like still right there in, or some of the photos I've seen are like, you know, Bono doing some Bono move thing on the screen, and the Edge is right below him, and it kind of creates this interesting juxtaposition of video and performer. And
I think it's a good you know, if I went to art school, so I can definitely see a good paper on
yeah,
if I were back in school, I'd probably write a paper on like U2 in the tours and their design stuff. Because I mean, I feel like, you know, because they've been employing U2, has been employing video artists since Pop Mart, you know, and U2 tour. So
yeah,
so they you know, like, there's actually people who do video art, you know, VHS. If people don't know about that, but yeah, they they go to a museum and actually go to, you know, see people doing video art, and it's just looping video sometimes it's, you know, and it's just, you know, I think it's just a great visual. And, you know, when I saw the layout for the floor plan, you know, which is just this, like, it's as simple as it can't be, is like, here's like one end of the stage, we'll have all the equipment, most of the equipment, and it shows this long catwalk to the, which is long, very long catwalk to the B stage. And there's this, like, wow, that's, it's, so it's a really long letter T, right? So it's, so I thought, like, this would be a really boring tour, but with the LED screens, like, we've been seeing little sneak peeks, you know, at the YouTube videos and the photos from the fans, it's just, it's like, wow, they've, you know, they actually thought this one through a lot.
Yeah.
A lot more.
So. Yeah, that's what's the same thing. I wasn't at all actually that excited about the tour and wasn't really too concerned if I didn't, where I live, it's a little bit of a jaunt to get to somewhere that they would, it's a flight somewhere anyways, at least to get to somewhere that they'd be playing. And so it wasn't, and they're not playing any on this leg of the tour anyways. They haven't announced anything anywhere close other than Montreal.
Vancouver.
Yeah. And so, but I wasn't that bummed about missing it. But now that I am starting to see and hear stuff from a tour, I'm like, oh, shoot, should have gone.
Yeah.
But we'll see. They'll likely come around again. They often do. They're going to Europe for the end of the year, I think, and then.
Right. I think they're trying to test out to see if the song still holds up. But I mean, you know, the whole, like, I think about it, they're kind of like, they got kind of burnt by the whole album release on the iTunes thing and the backlash, which is kind of a little not warranted, you know, too much. But I felt like, oh, let's just see what happens. But even, you know, we talked about it in the last podcast you had me on, was that we talked about the, just if 10% of the people who heard the album liked it, they would sell the tour, no problem, you know.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. And so, and they've been selling the tour, like at Paris, the end of this leg of the tour, like, just sold out, and they had to add shows. So, I mean, they've been selling out everywhere they go. So I think it's pretty good. I think the main concern is that they want to, Bono said that, it's like, they want to see what people were singing back the songs from the new album. And I think they, you know, I think they are. I mean, Song for Someone, people were singing, and you can hear in the audience. Cedarwood Road, I think people were singing. The Troubles, I love the Troubles song. I think that's I think it's probably one of my favorite tracks off the album proper. And then,
even like a Raised by Wolves song, which is kind of a little bit odd-ish sounding on the album. Mm-hmm. You can hear the crowd, and especially like the one thing I was going to say with what they're doing on this tour, which they've done a little bit of, but I don't think to this degree in a long time, where they're doing like sort of staying in one place for a long time, like doing one, mm-hmm. two, three, four, like five shows in Chicago and like eight shows in Madison Square Gardens, and London too, like, which, you know, allows people like myself, if I was, you know, you're far away, you can go get somewhere and possibly hit a tour stop, rather than going to every single city and then along the way or whatever. And, which is probably just at the stage of life they're at too, it's kind of nice to be able to hole up in a hotel instead of having to pack up and move every 5 days or whatever. But,
Well, it's funny. I think, Sunday, Bloody Sunday and Raised by Wolves is, I think they're paired now just because the way the special display, because I feel like, I think they sound great. So I would definitely check out those two on video. I think if people can get to YouTube. But also the rumor is that I read is that they've actually practiced 60 songs for this tour, and usually when they've gone on tour the last couple times, they sit pretty close to their set list.
Yeah,
and they don't really deviate from it, maybe like one or two songs, but the goal, I think they just really wanted to have like be able to pull from their catalog and have a different, potentially different show each night. And so it's good. So there hasn't been too much deviation, you know, to the end of like research it so far. They've only played a handful of shows, and so they have brought in some new songs into it that they haven't played in a long time. But there hasn't been like this like major shakeup, you know, with like, oh, we'll just go the whole new set list, which, you know, they're not going to, because I mean they still have like those touchstones that they wanted to do. Like I mentioned earlier, like Sunday Bloody Sunday and Raised by Wolves is kind of, it sounds like it's like a really major production, audio wise and studio wise, like, you know, so they push a button there, they have to have those two songs together. And then, you know, they start with Miracle of Joy Ramone, and then, you know, they have to have start with that one. And so there's going to be some pieces of the set list, no matter which tour date you go to, it's going to be the same, but there's really room for more, variety, you know, in the set list this tour.
Yeah.
Than other tours. And so, and in fact, they just did last night. I'm not sure if you got the link to it or not, but some fan was in the, was it Roxy Theater for the, was it, KROQ, is it K?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what, yeah. It is a special performance for the LA radio station. And, so some special, like, so I actually played like a small venue for the first time in eons, I guess. And they actually played like The Ocean, 11 O'Clock TikTok, Electric Company, Send in the Clowns, Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out of, and in California for the first time. So
yeah, which those are like, so The Ocean, like, I don't know if they've ever, I'm sure they have at some point. I don't have this, the tour or their whatever, the Wikipedia entry in front of me, but I don't know.
2005 was the last time they played that one.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah.
Which is pretty crazy. And that's fun. It seems like they're having fun with the set list and the songs that they're playing, which is good. And it'll make for an interesting tour. Cause I remember reading a quote from Adam or somebody that after the Joshua Tree tour and Rattle and Hum stuff, it was like, they just felt like they were on this treadmill of playing their greatest hits and that's all they could ever do. And that was why they tried to do the Zoo TV tour differently or whatever, to like shake it up a bit. Yeah. And so I could see, especially when they're stuck someplace, like I said, with in LA or whatever for 5 or 6 nights, then just mixing it up and having a little bit of fun with it. So,
yeah, I mean, I just like, I try to give millionaires some credit, you know, some slack that, you know, that they like, they're destined to play greatest hits albums and that people want to hear them play greatest hits. Like the pain that must be.
Yeah,
exactly. For millionaire musicians.
Yeah,
yeah. I try to feel some pain, but I mean, they're not the KC Sunshine Band, you know. Just like,
yeah,
you know, just, you know, who are destined to play a limited catalog.
Yeah.
So it's so, but yeah. So yeah, but you know, kudos to them. I mean, I think the I Feel Pain is just that, you know, they always try to be relevant, and it kind of they overexert themselves to try to be relevant, like with every studio album release and stuff like that. So, and not that it's like, you know, like a terrible ideal to have. I just feel like it's, as a fan, I think I find their stuff that's not popular, like I think Zurupa, or a pop. I appreciate those albums more, where they experiment more and they kind of fail in their faces a lot more, because I feel like that's more true and raw to the band, and not as polished. So I feel like that's,
well, that's where, like, I mean, to go deep catalog or whatever on U2 history, that it feels like Actung Baby was kind of this accidental artistic expression that happened to resonate really well with the world, and so they got you know, artistic success, credibility, as well as commercial success and credibility, and so they've kind of been in search of that perfect mix ever since, it feels like. And and yeah, it at this stage too, where they're, you know, whatever, 50 something years old, it does feel a little bit like your dad trying to be hip at the party. Like, you know, okay, dad, you're not going to, I can't be hip and I'm late 30s or whatever. Like, I don't know. It sometimes, yeah, the sort of over exaggerated intensity about trying to be, like I said, relevant is.
Right. I mean, yeah. Yeah. So like Action Baby. And then I think what's it called? What was it? All That You Can't Leave Behind, I think was.
Yeah.
Came out at the right time, but yeah, so, you know, they've been lucky with their career, and I was not the lucky, but also like work hard too, so it's but yeah,
it's been a rough tour too. I was going to mention, like, I didn't realize back in February, I guess, they lost like their longtime tour chaplain died, and then Larry's mom or dad passed away just before the tour started.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the other day, their 33-year-long tour manager passed away.
Yeah,
and Edge fell off the stage, and Bono fell off a bike.
Yeah.
And
like, right, it's kind just, of
been a
yeah.
bit of a weird tour that way for them, I'm sure, emotionally and just right. life stuff.
And this is the first major project, you know, the album, you know, whole concept without Paul McGuinness.
Yeah, that's true, too. So, a new manager.
Yeah. So actually they have two new managers. I mean, they have two people taking the place of Paul McGuinness. And so, so it's kind of like, you know, slumber tour, if you will. But, you know, maybe they do need that, like, navel gazing to, like, just reestablish and then look back and see what they can do. So,
yeah.
And, but you know, there's hints of Songs for Experience album dropping. I'm not really sure if that's true or not anymore. But yeah, maybe they, you know,
Yeah, I read in the review of the Vancouver tour, like, startup, there was like a special little mini studio set up beneath the stage so they could go record songs and work on stuff for this other album, which it feels like ever since the Actung Baby's Europa kind of double package that each time they're on tour, Bono and the Edge, it seems like, aspired to do that. But then probably by the time they're halfway through the tour, they're like, oh, this is exhausting enough. Let's just scrap it and save the ideas.
Yeah, Zeropa just happened because I think Edge just has abundance of free time and had to get his mind off of stuff and just push it through. And so we're going to need someone on the band to be that, you know, that producer on that goes with them. So I don't know. So
yeah, I was like, wasn't his marriage breaking up or something? That's like the stuff.
I don't want to bring it up, but now that you did. Yeah, well, yeah, so
we're not a gossip podcast. But
we're a weathered podcast. Yeah, exactly. So. So what was the weather like in 1983? So I think we'll need to, the album will need the hero. Otherwise, it won't get released until like next year or something like that. Which I wanted to be like you know, I'm a fan, whatever. So it'll happen when it happens. So, that Zeropa, like the double, you know, like Octane Baby and Zeropa was just like, as a fan, that was just like the best thing.
Yeah,
that could happen. So.
A little present. All right. Well, we've gone about 25 minutes longer than I usually go on this podcast. So, if anybody's still sticking around, this isn't a regular episode. If Chris and I long ago had a YouTube podcast together that lasted about 6 episodes. So we're trying to cram.
And we both agreed to like you too. I think we both like at the end of it. It was like, hey, you know what? We both like you too.
Yeah. So, Chris, in closing up, I guess, where are you going to see? Are you going to make an effort to get out to a tour stop on this tour?
Yeah, not on this leg, but probably when they come back again, I think I'll definitely do. Yeah, I definitely would if I can. But yeah. I had this weird vision of like going to see them in Paris at the end of the tour. Yeah, and but usually like as a jaded fan who brings the cynical nature to fandom, just you two. While I'm enjoying like the first like shows so far, you know, from what we can see and everything like that. I think they get really polished, you know, for the second leg of the tour, you know, especially it's a 3-leg tour or whatnot. So, you know, but again, we mentioned earlier, just like, you know, they practice 60 songs. So they sound really crisp coming out of the, you know, coming out for the first show. So, but if this is any indication, I'm hoping like the second leg, they should be really, really strong.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Cool. And where can folks find you on the internet if they want to bug you about your U2 cynicism?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Telject, TELEJECT. And my website, which is needs updating all the time, is ChristopherSchmidt.com.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah. We'll do it again whenever some sort of interesting U2 moment happens.
Hey, don't sell me short, man. Don't sell me short. I got plenty of weather information.
Yeah, U2 information or Austin weather updates. Yeah, some sort of tornado or something will happen. Hopefully not too terrible, but just interesting enough to be talked about lightly. I'm iChris on Twitter, and goodstuff.fm/dailyish/100 is where you can find this episode and links to... I tried to throw links as we were talking about them to the U2 songs, concert videos that we talked about, so if you want to check them out, and let me know if you're going to be on at one of the concert stops. I'd love to actually interview somebody who post-concert experience, just to see what it was like in person, and have you on the show to chat about that. As always, I don't know what as always is, actually. We'll just end it there. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
All right. See you.